Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on Fox 27 event, which takes place in Charlotte, North Carolina. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we lost 2.31 units for UFC 220 after going 1-2 on our premium bets. We also won our one-unit free bet on Enrique Barzola. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 27 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and Big Network Fox this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a featherweight contest between a pair of UFC newcomers. We have Austin Arnett, who is 14-3, taking on Corey Sandhagen, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Sandhagen, minus 190, the comeback on Arnett at plus 150. Looking over at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, the line just went up, so not a lot of action coming in yet. I think it's going to stay steady around 2-1 for Sandhagen. We'll see which way the action does come in. But again, it's a fresh line. The UFC just announced this fight midweek, basically, so not a lot of time for a lot of people to do research. They're going to start doing it now, so I'm sure we'll see some action and some movement coming our way soon. But again, I think around 2-1 is a fair price. I mean, Sandhagen just coming off of a really impressive win, obviously on LFA, Access TV fights. I mean, the guy is one of those guys that's been around the sport for a long time, and he's had some hype behind him for sure. And it's really justified if you've watched this guy fight. He's definitely a talented fighter. He's a stand-up artist. And in fact, Arnett, of course, coming from Dana White's Contender Series, we got to see him fight as well, and he had a great fight with Davis on that show. I mean, just an all-out war. So we know what Arnett's about as well. If you dig back through his footage, you can see how much of a complete fighter he is. But the funny thing about this fight is it is a striker versus striker matchup, because Arnett primarily likes to utilize a striking game. He has a point karate type of background, but he is above and beyond a point karate fighter. I mean, he's evolved his game. He's got some wrestling. He's got some jiu-jitsu skill as well. He's got a pretty sick guillotine choke, actually. And if he gets you on the ground and he gets top control, Arnett could definitely do some damage there as well. So you got to watch out again for his guillotine choke. If he's, you know, even if you're not on the ground with him, if you bend down a little bit or try to scoop down to take him down, he definitely clinches around your neck quickly, gets that grip on, and he tries to squeeze away, and he's capable of submitting you that way. So Arnett is a pretty good fighter. He fights at a very high pace as well. If you watch, you know, the fight again on Dana White's Contender Series, you could see some of that. I mean, it was just an all-out war for basically three rounds. It was a great fight. Sandhagen, on the other hand, again, I just said he had an impressive win. He's, you know, a little bit more of your quick finisher at times. The guy has a kickboxing background, actually. He's a former WKA kickboxing world champion, so that says a lot. So that's what I'm talking about, a striker versus striker matchup. But Sandhagen is also more complete in a way that he's developed his wrestling game. He has good takedowns. He has good jiu-jitsu to go along with it as well. So there's a lot to like about Sandhagen as well. These guys are really similar. I just think the difference here is Sandhagen's a little bit more of a dangerous finisher. I mean, if you watch this guy with his leg kicks, and I mean, the way he moves and the way he explodes into his technique, it's pretty impressive. He has some pop in his punches as well. And again, he has the ability to get the takedowns. I think he has a little bit better wrestling than Arnett does in this spot as well. So I think he can control the pace a little bit more. I think he is the more dangerous finisher of the two. So again, justified favorite, about 2-1 or so. But it is going to be a war, and I expect this to be a three round, you know, affair. And if it hits a scorecard, it'd be a 29-28 type of competitive decision. Now, again, along the way, both these guys can finish, so might not get three rounds, especially with the short notice. Now, Arnett also, I should mention, had a fight coming up next month, so I don't think he's going to be terribly out of shape for this fight. And again, Sandhagen just fought last week, and it was a quick finish, so he's not going to be that out of shape. So I do expect these guys to probably last a little while, and we should see an exciting fight. But I have to pick Sandhagen in this spot. I think he is a little bit more capable of finishing the fight, and if not, I think he could probably edge out the scorecards. So the pick is Sandhagen in what should be a pretty exciting fight to start off the card.
And I like Sandhagen as well. Training out of Colorado, you know that his conditioning should be fine. The one issue is, I mean, he literally just fought. He fought last week in an LFA card, and he won convincingly in the first round, so he didn't expend a lot of energy, but usually you don't see guys make such an incredibly quick turnaround. But the UFC was really impressed by him, and they wanted to give him a shot, so I'm not too surprised. Arnett is definitely a guy that deserved to be in the UFC despite losing on Tuesday Night Contender Series, because his fight against Brandon Davis was probably one of the most entertaining of the whole season. And Arnett is definitely a guy that has no quit in him. I mean, he got busted up badly with a brutal elbow in the second round of that fight, and he just kept pushing forward. He's a solid overall striker, has pretty good fundamentals. He just couldn't quite keep up with the pace of his opponent and ended up losing that decision. Sandhagen is a guy with power, speed, tenacity, and I think he has an average to above average ground game as well. And that could be enough to beat Arnett. I mean, Arnett, while he did push a really high pace, he still got outworked in his loss. And Sandhagen, I don't expect him to be quite as aggressive and as with throwing combinations as Brandon Davis did against Arnett. But I think overall Sandhagen has more power and he's a little bit more dangerous with finishing ability. So while Arnett showed a tremendous chin against Davis, he might not be able to withstand the power that Sandhagen brings in this fight. So I think this is going to be an entertaining scrap. Arnett definitely is going to be tough and hang in there and force Sandhagen to really work. But I've been impressed with what I've seen out of Sandhagen, both in his RFA fights and his LFA fights and some of his other random local fights that he's participated in, because he does have a fight-ending power. He mixes up his striking well, and I think that he can overwhelm Arnett and land that big shot. And even with Arnett having a good chin, I think Sandhagen has a decent chance of finishing him anyway. So my pick is going to be Corey Sandhagen. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Nico Price, who is 10-1 with one no contest, taking on George Sullivan, who is 17-5 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Price, minus 185, the comeback on Sullivan, plus 145. This line did move. It's now Price minus 290, the comeback on Sullivan, plus 245. So early action coming in on Price, to say the least. I understand it. I mean, Price is definitely the younger, fresher, more hyped fighter. I mean, I understand also that, you know, Price started off his UFC career with a bang over quality wins. And, I mean, unfortunately for him, he had his first setback against Luque the last fight. Not surprising. I mean, Luque is a stud. So that's not necessarily a bad loss for especially a young up and coming fighter like Price. So I think he'll learn a lot from that fight and get a little bit better. But I mean, he has wins, quality wins over Joban. I mean, if you got a chin or you got suspect, even submission defense with a guy like Price, he's a finisher. He's going to go after you, and you cannot, with his aggression, with his unorthodox style on the feet. I mean, he's a dangerous guy. So Sullivan, I don't know what to say about him. He's a little bit inconsistent. I mean, when he made his UFC debut and then he had a couple fights into the UFC and he performed relatively well overall, you thought, man, this guy can make a run at welterweight. I mean, he has that grinding style. He's hard to take down. He's in your face. He's tough as nails. But unfortunately for him, he's been a little inconsistent. And then all of a sudden, you know, he has his trouble with USADA and he got popped for USADA. And now I can see why he's a little inconsistent possibly. So I don't know what to say about him. I mean, he's 36 years old. You know, with the time off that he recently had as well, what's it going to look like? I think that's why everybody else is pretty much fading him at this point. If you look back, I think the one of the worst losses for him, obviously, Yakovlev knocked him out, but, outside of that was with Tim Means put a beating on him and Sullivan looked like a scared fighter throughout that whole fight. So I think this is eerily similar. I mean, I know Price and Means are a little bit different, but I think Price's aggression and his ability to, you know, finish fights might have Sullivan reeling here as well. And if that's the case, Price is going to look really good and have a highlight reel type of finish, I think, in this spot. So I expect better from Sullivan, but again, with all the circumstances surrounding him, I get why people are coming in on Price, and I'm going to pick Price to win this fight as well. And he probably does finish Sullivan along the way. If Sullivan can survive, and if Sullivan shows up and he's game, this is going to be a tough fight for Price. So it all depends on Sullivan here. I mean, that's the question mark. And again, I think the people right now wouldn't lay 3-1 against a guy like Sullivan, because if he does show up, you guys are going to all get burned. So I think maybe 2-1, I understand it, but as it climbs up and the line gets a little bit higher, I would probably stay away at this point at 3-1. So those of you guys that got a good line early on, I think you're probably going to be in good shape. But again, at this point where you're getting the 3-1 category, you got to be careful. So I wouldn't touch it at this spot, but I do think Price probably gets a win. And again, a lot of it's just based on not trusting Sullivan at this point.
I definitely agree on not trusting Sullivan. I mean, he's coming off of a knockout loss. And that was 2 years ago because of multiple instances of getting tagged by USADA. So, and you got to remember, Sullivan's 36 years old now. So losing 2 years that late in your career can be devastating for a fighter. And especially since he's going in there against somebody in Nico Price, who can be just an absolute powerhouse. Price is a guy that has significantly more power than Alexander Yakovlev. And he's 8 years younger. He's more explosive. He's just more dangerous. I mean, realistically, the only way Sullivan wins this fight is if he can close the distance and just completely grind Price out. He needs to push him against the fence, get him on the floor, work top control. In a pure stand-up fight, Sullivan is just not going to be able to trade punch for punch with Price because he won't be able to eat the strikes that Price is dishing out. Offensively, Sullivan's not the worst striker, but I mean, he more relies on pressuring his opponents, getting them to back up. And I don't see that happening with Price. So I just think this is a bad matchup. And unless Sullivan can completely neutralize Price's power, then I just see Price knocking him out at some point. I think ring rust is going to be real here, especially for an older fighter like Sullivan. And this is just a bad matchup for me. So I think this is definitely Nico Price's fight to lose, and he should win by knockout. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card is a lightweight contest between Vince Pichel, who is 10-1, and Joaquim Silva, who is also 10-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Tough fight. I opened it exactly a pick of minus 120 either way. Pichel minus 120, Silva minus 120. I'm looking over at Five Dimes right now. They got Pichel minus 110, Silva minus 110. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There is two-way action coming in this fight, and rightfully so. I mean, this is one of those fights that I think Pichel, if he was a little bit more consistent and didn't have his layoff and then coming back, you know, and fighting Brown and looking pretty good. I mean, he got rid of Brown early in round one, so you can't ask for anything better on your return fight for a guy like Pichel. But I still have question marks about him. I wish he was a little bit more consistent. If so, I'd be probably a little bit more confident in picking him. So I'll get that out of the way. I am going to pick Pichel to win this fight, but Silva's going to bring it, man. Silva's one of these guys that's definitely improving in all aspects of the game. I mean, he's a well-rounded fighter. Of course, you know, he was on the Ultimate Fighter and, you know, he ended up getting beat on that show. He got submitted actually, surprisingly, because he does have a pretty decent BJJ background as well. But outside of that, when he, you know, made his official UFC debut, he had a couple solid wins. I mean, his last fight over Madadi, short notice, older Madadi, whatever you want to say, I understand it, but it was still pretty impressive because Madadi's not an easy out. So Silva is getting better. He's still 28 years old, so he's young enough that he's going to keep on improving. He's got a knockout power on the feet. He's got some decent wrestling. He goes after it, the takedown game as well, and then he can submit you on the ground. So Silva is a pretty complete package, but he does have some holes in his game. And a lot of that, Pichel might exploit, actually, because Pichel is another one of these guys that has a pretty complete game on the feet. He has some knockout power as well. He does look for takedowns. I mean, if you look back at his fight against Enyuquani, he was able to get that fight to the floor and utilize his wrestling to win that fight. So Pichel isn't really a one-trick pony. He's able to knock people out on the feet. He's able to get the fight to the ground and grind people out as well if he has to go that route. And I think he probably will mix it up here enough that's why he steals a decision type of win. Now, as far as danger goes here, I do trust Silva a little bit more as far as not getting finished in this fight. I think Pichel does have some knockout power, but I don't expect him to finish Silva here in this spot. I think Silva could possibly finish Pichel, though, so that's the danger here. I think if this fight ends ends inside the distance is probably going to be Silva pulling off the win here. So again, that's part of me not trusting Pichot. He is 35 years old now, of course. And again, we didn't get to see enough of him in his return fight against Brown. I mean, he looked pretty good. At the same time, I think he looked a little flat at times as well. So I'm expecting this fight to play out a little bit longer than that, of course, and we'll get to see what Pichot's really like at this point of his career. So that's where the confidence level isn't very high for me with this pick with Pichot, but I do think that he's capable of winning this fight. And again, if he had a little bit more consistency and, you know, he didn't have that kind of layoff and the age factor in here, I would definitely pick him a lot more confident. But this is a true pick'em fight for a reason, so I'll slightly lean Pichot's way, but it's not a confident pick.
This fight could definitely go either way, but I was really impressed by what I saw out of Pichot in his return after such a long layoff due to all the injuries and everything that he had suffered over the couple years that he was out. And Joaquim Silva, though, is a guy that, you know, he wasn't expected to start his career in the UFC 3-0. He was a quarterfinalist or semifinalist on Tough Brazil, but he's made things work and he's picked up a couple split decision victories. He had a pretty impressive knockout of Andrew Holbrook, although I think there's three guys now that have finished Holbrook in the first round. So maybe that one wasn't quite as impressive, but he did pick up split decisions over some strong grapplers in Nazareno Malagari and Reza Madadi. So I have to give him some credit here, but he still really hasn't faced that good of a lightweight. And I think Vince Pichot, while he's not an elite 155 pounder, I think that he's at least a middle of the road guy. And this is going to be a very big test to see, if Silva can hang. Pichot looked so good against Brown, picking up that quick stoppage victory. And he's a guy that has strong wrestling, can grind when he needs to, has decent power on the feet when he needs to, and it looked like he clearly has developed his game during the time that he was out. So I expect Pichot to be in Silva's face, making him fight on his back foot and force Silva to land good counter strikes. And I don't know if he'll be able to do that. I mean, Silva has had some very close fights so far in the UFC against some pretty low level competition. So unless he lands like a really good shot, I think that Pichot's pressure is just going to be a little bit too much for him. I expect Pichot to be moving forward constantly, to be either looking for offensively clinching takedowns. I think that him being the more well-rounded fighter is going to be a big advantage here, because I think Pichot is going to test the feet, and if he can hang with the feet, he's just going to stay there and try to beat Silva standing. But if Silva is having success there, Pichot is going to be looking for takedowns. So the fact that he can mix things up a little bit better than Silva should be a big advantage. And Pichot is the bigger, longer, stronger guy. So I think that he can bully Silva a little bit. So my pick is going to be Vince Pichot. Now dropping down to the women's flyweight division, we have Justine Kish, who is 6-1, taking on Ji Yeon Kim, who is 6-1-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Kish -180 to come back on Kim at +140. Right now, looking over Five Dimes, another mover here, similar to the price line. Kish is now -310. The comeback on Kim is at +255. So early action coming in Kish's way. I'm not necessarily in agreement with it, honestly. I mean, I'm surprised. I know that Kish is a popular fighter, more popular than Kim. I mean, let's face it, a lot of these Asian girls aren't getting a ton of respect by the betting community out there in a lot of cases, but they're pretty good. I mean, they should deserve a little bit more respect than I think people are getting them or giving them, because I think they have some quality skill sets. I mean, really technical at times, and I think they're, you know, capable of getting some W's and actually improving along the way, especially now that they're, you know, fighting against a higher caliber competition, steady competition. I think Kim is going to kind of prove that as well. I think in her UFC debut, she didn't look bad. It was a competitive fight for sure. I think that, you know, a lot of people were expecting a little bit more from her. But again, I think that she is going to kind of show up here because she's moving down to, I think, what's a better weight class for her. Kim's dropping down to 125 pounds, so the ladies flyweight division. Kish is actually moving up to the flyweight division as well. So Kim's going to have a little bit of size over Kish. Now, I think a lot of people are coming in here betting Kish for the main reason. I mean, her grinding style. She, you know, she goes after, she pushes a high pace. She looks for takedowns. She gets top position. She starts grinding you out that way as well. She's the type of girl that if she can't get the fight to the ground, she just keeps on coming forward. The problem with that is Kim will snipe her a little bit. I mean, Kim definitely has some good boxing. She's got some power. She's got some length here. And if Kish just goes forward and eats punches like the way she has in the past, I mean, defensively, that is a concern for Kish because she gets marked up a little bit. And she's tough as nails. It's hard to get her out of there, of course. But against a fighter like Kim, I think her knockout power is a little bit underrated. And her hands are really good. Now, of course, Kish is going to probably try to neutralize that by getting some takedowns along the way. And it's possible. But I think Kim is going to probably be tougher to take down and control that way as well than I think most people think here. So Kim also, I should mention, has a little bit of BJJ. I mean, she's got some skill on the ground. She's capable of submitting people. So she's a pretty complete fighter, but she needs to stuff those takedowns here because that's probably Kish's path to victory. And I think, again, that's why people are kind of coming in and laying that chalk on Kish a little bit. They think she's going to be able to outpace Kim. She's going to be able to grind her out and probably end up stealing the scorecards here. So I think she gets marked up personally along the way to the point where it's a lot closer on the scorecards than people think. And Kim might even possibly finish her. So I will go as far as a pure pick. I'll lean Kish's way because, again, I mean, a lot of times the ladies do end up making the scorecards and we have some competitive decisions. So I think Kish can probably do that. She should be favored in this fight slightly. But I don't agree with where the line is now at minus 310. It's probably a dog or pass situation right now on Kim. So I do see some value on the dog here, but at the same time, pure pick wise, I have to lean a little bit more towards Kish right now because I do think she has more of a chance to kind of push that high pace and, you know, win over the judges in a close, hard fought battle. But again, be careful. Do not lay 3-1 on Kish in this fight. She's going to get marked up. Kim is definitely underrated here. So that's my caution in this fight.
If you go back and watch Kim's fight against Pudilova in her UFC debut, that was surprisingly competitive. I mean, granted, Pudilova isn't a world beater, but that was a bantamweight contest and Kim showcased some decent power on the feet, some decent movement. I thought that she showed her hand speed wasn't too bad and she looked dangerous. And now she's dropping down a weight class. She has a huge reach. Granted, she doesn't use it very well. She swings more, with looping strikes rather than straight shots or with good jabs. But I think that her dropping down to flyweight is going to be a good thing for her. I mean, Kish is not a huge – what I didn't think she was that big of a strawweight. And, you know, she was having some trouble against fighters in the strawweight division, eventually losing that most recent bout to Felice Herrig. I didn't think Kish looked that great on the feet. And on the ground, she got out-grappled by Herrig and ended up losing that decision in her most recent fight. So this is a fight that I think is very winnable for Ji Yeon Kim. Kim has the power and the pace to outwork Kish, and especially with Kish's striking defense, I think Kim could really do some damage. Now, in terms of the grappling, I wasn't very impressed with what I saw out of Kim on the ground. Pudilova did threaten a little bit with submissions a couple times with guillotine chokes. But, I mean, she didn't pull it off, and Kim did eventually get out of those situations. But that is something to be concerned about because even though Kish isn't that great on the ground, she might be better than Kim on the ground. But she's going to have to get it to the floor, and that's important because Kish is going to be the smaller fighter here. The one thing I'm actually worried about a little bit is how Kim handles the weight cut because, I mean, she had a long reach for a bantamweight and now she's dropping down to featherweight or flyweight. So, this could be a difficult weight cut for her. Kish is not going to be a problem. So, I'll be cautious depending on how Kim looks dropping down to flyweight, but I think honestly that the public has this one wrong. Kim looked half decent in her UFC debut, and I think that she's going to continue to improve, and I think that she can definitely win this fight. So I'm actually going to pick her as a pretty big underdog. Now dropping down to the strawweight division, we have Randa Marcos, who is 7-6, taking on Juliana Lima, who is 9-4. Now, Nick, Where did you open this fight? And how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Marcos -190 to come back on Lima +150. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is currently Marcos -165. The comeback on Lima is +145. So a 5 cent drop on the dog line. Margins have tightened up a little bit. And there is two-way action coming in this fight as well. Another interesting fight. I mean, to me, there's no question who the better overall skilled fighter here is. It's Marcos. I mean, I think that stand-up wise, she has a little bit more of a variety in her attack, her angles that she utilizes. I think it caused some fits. I think she's a little bit faster than Lima as well. Jiu-jitsu wise, I think she's the better jiu-jitsu practitioner here as well. Wrestling gets interesting. Of course, Lima's a pretty good grinder, but she has been put on her back as well at times. And then on the ground, of course, she just got submitted as well. So she has shown some kryptonite, I guess, in some areas. So Marcos has a skill to actually beat Lima pretty much everywhere in this fight, but Marcos, again, I think is a little bit inconsistent for my liking at times. I mean, she is a very complete fighter. And again, out of the mixed martial artist aspect of it, she's definitely the better fighter here. But Lima does push forward at a pretty decent pace at times. I think her boxing and her striking skills getting better. She's getting more aggressive. She's getting more confident on the feet as well. So Marcos at times has those, I don't know, those performances that you just kind of scratch your head at. And I think that Lima, if she's on, she's going to give Marcos all that she can handle and possibly even maybe steal a decision here. So I do expect this fight to go to the scorecards. If there's going to be a finish, I do expect it to be Marcos maybe finishing Lima inside if that does happen. But I think more so than anything, it's going to be a competitive fight that hits the scorecards. And if so, it is going to be another 29-28, maybe even a split decision type of fight here if that's the case. I'm going to lean a little bit towards Marcos because, again, I think overall she can land a little bit more effectively. She could probably get out of the way a little bit more. I think she has better footwork and movement along the way. And then, again, I think that she can probably get off her back, at least transition to top position at times if she needs to here in this fight as well. But it's going to be interesting because if Lima is able to capitalize and grind Marcos out a little bit along the way here or be the stronger puncher and be a little bit more effective, because Marcos does like to, you know, even though she has some decent footwork, I mean, she definitely gets marked up in fights as well. So with Lima's, I think, improved striking along the way, it is definitely going to be a closer fight. So slight lean towards Marcos, but again, it's hard to lay the chalk here. So I think it is another situation where you kind of stay away from this, or you might take a small stab at the dog here, but I do think Marcos probably edges this fight out.
Random Marcos is one of those fighters that can be so frustrating. She's shown signs of being decent on the feet. She's shown signs of having a very strong wrestling game, but then she also can get submitted easily or get outworked on the feet or get into fights where she gets out scrambled and put on her back. So against somebody like Juliana Lima, who is very likely going to be attempting to get this fight to the floor in a hurry and get top position, Marcos could get herself in some trouble. Now, Lima most recently had a very tough loss to Tisha Torres. She just got outworked by Torres, and then she actually got submitted, put herself in a bad position, and got choked out. So I'm expecting her to be coming out very aggressive, very angry about that loss. Now Marcos, on the other hand, you know, she's coming off of a loss herself to Alexa Grasso, and that was a fight that was competitive, but Grasso just outworked her on the feet. While Marcos did have some success with takedowns and didn't look terrible on the feet, but just couldn't quite keep up with the pace of Grasso in the stand-up portion. So in this fight, I expect Marcos to do a little bit better than Lima when the fight is standing. And while Marcos does have good wrestling, I think Lima probably has the better ground game of the two. So if it goes to the floor, I can see Lima getting top position or forcing scrambles and sweeping to top position and maybe even attempting some submissions. While Lima hasn't had a lot of success finishing fights in the UFC so far, she is a dangerous grappler, and I think that she could be dangerous enough to steal a decision here against somebody in Random Marcos who can be very inconsistent. Now, if Marcos shows up with all of her potential, she definitely has a good chance to win this fight, but I just can't trust her at this point, and I think Juliana Lima might be able to pull this one out. It just all depends on whether Lima can get it to the floor and keep it there. So my pick is going to be Lima, but I'm not that confident about it. Now, moving back up to the flyweight division, we have Caitlin Chookagian, who is 9-1, taking on Mara Romero Barella, who is 12-4 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Chookagian -195, a comeback on Barella at +155. Looking over five dimes, another spot where the dog got a little bit of action. Right now, it's Chookagian -160. The comeback on Barella is +140. And to me, this is another spot where there's no question who the better mixed martial artist is here as well. It's Chookagian. I mean, Chookagian has the total package, and she is dropping down again to the flyweight division, which that's kind of where she belongs. We were talking about recently Jessica Eye moving to 125, and that's, you know, the rightful home for her as well. Chookagian fits along that line as well. I mean, she's basically a 125-pound fighter, but the UFC obviously didn't have that division when she entered the UFC, so she had to fight up, and she had success there as well. So I think coming down to 125 pounds, I think is going to give her a little bit more confidence. And skill-wise, I mean, Chookagian, again, I think she has the total package. Her striking ability on the feet is pretty nice. She picks people apart, has a little bit of power to go with it. Her diverse attack is nice to watch. I mean, she mixes things up really well. I think she has a little bit of underrated ground game to go along with it. She has decent takedown defense overall, and she's faced wrestlers in the past. So, I mean, she's prepared for what Barella is going to bring to the table here. And Barella is one of those girls that, I mean, she's a grinder. You saw what she did in her UFC debut. I mean, she was able to get the fight to the ground and, you know, win that fight in dominant fashion. It was surprising, actually, how good Barella looked in that fight. I thought, you know, Faria would actually hold up a little bit better in that fight, but I mean, she got taken down and Barella was able to get the choke in there. So that's how dominant she's looked. And then Barella also before that, I mean, she had a fight in Invicta against a seasoned vet in Dudeva, and she's getting better. So Barella is one of these girls that's working extremely hard. She's, you know, getting better, improving fight by fight. Her stand up game, she's got enough power on the feet to, I guess, make it interesting, but more so it's when she gets you on the ground, her ground and pound is what works for her as well. So she's dangerous on the ground. I just think she's going to have probably a little bit of trouble getting Chookagian on the ground. And if that's the case, she's going to get picked apart on the feet. And again, there's no question who the better mixed martial artist here. It is Chookagian. So I'm going to pick Chookagian. I think that she is going to basically outpoint Barella enough to get the nod here. You know, we'll see. Maybe she's got enough confidence to finish this fight along the way. Barella has been knocked out and finished a few times in her career. Chookagian is definitely capable of doing that as well. So if Barella does not utilize her game plan, it could be a short night for her as well. So the pick is Chookagian. I think if she does get through this fight and, you know, makes a successful debut at 125 pounds here against a pretty solid wrestler in Barella, that she's going to go a long way in this division and possibly wear the strap one day. I mean, that's how much potential and talent Chookagian does have. So she needs to tighten up that takedown defense to the point where she doesn't have issues with wrestlers, and I think she's on her way. So Chookagian, legit 125 pounds. I think she makes a run here, and it starts with Barella. So the pick is Chookagian.
And I agree completely. Chookagian definitely seems like one of those fighters that only fought at bantamweight because the UFC didn't have a women's flyweight division yet. She's long. She has solid overall striking ability, and she showcased it so far. She outstruck Liz Carmouche in a split decision loss because she got taken down, but then she also outstruck Lauren Murphy and Irene Aldana in her two UFC wins. And she looked great in those wins. I mean, she landed 105 strikes against Aldana, which is very strong for a three-round fight. So, Chookagian, I mean, this is a fighter that I think is easily a top 10 UFC flyweight immediately and has the potential to be a contender for sure. So we're just going to see how she looks at flyweight, but she fought at flyweight for the most part when she wasn't in the UFC and had quite a bit of success. So she's somebody that I definitely believe in, and I think that she has a very good chance here against Barella because Barella isn't much of a stand-up fighter, and Chookagian should be able to just light her up when they're standing. It's just all about avoiding the takedowns and then getting back to her feet if she does get taken down because Barella does have a decent ground game. She showcased that in her UFC debut against Faria. She got the takedown. She passed guard. She went for submission and picked it up. So she did a great job there. And I just think Chookagian is definitely going to be the more well-rounded fighter. She's going to be more complete. And while Chookagian has had some issues with takedown defense, I think that she's somebody that is has above average overall skill, and she should be working on that, and I expect that she'll be able to stop Varela from getting the takedowns. Chookagian has good length, and I think that she might make it really difficult for Varela if she uses good footwork and works from the outside. So we'll see how she looks, but I think Chookagian definitely is somebody to keep an eye on in the women's flyweight division. So she's my pick. Now moving up to the featherweight division, we have Mirsad Bektik, who is 11-1, taking on Godofredo Pepe, who is 14-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Bektik -565, the comeback on Pepe +375. So right now, looking over five dimes, it is Bektik -600. The comeback on Pepe is at +450. So a little bit more action coming in Bektik's way. Of course, they're going to get drilled with parlays. I mean, everybody knows what the storyline here is. Bektik is one of the best prospects at 145 pounds. Unfortunately for him, he ran into the damage last fight, and Elkins had one of those just miraculous comebacks and got him out of there in the third round. So unfortunate for Bektik, because he was on his way to another solid win, and he was on his way to climb that ladder. Now, of course, he gets back on track here against Pepe. He should, at least, right? That's what we all expect. But man, I'll tell you what, we've seen some chin issues with Bektik a little bit along the way. I mean, I know he's only got this one loss to Darren Elkins in his last fight, but you know, if you look back, obviously, when he had that fight against Chaz Kelly, now, you know, I mean, there was some controversy in that fight or whatever, but he got, you know, hit in that fight, and he got rocked in that fight as well. He has been blasted in fights and been wobbled a little bit. So Bektik, I mean, that is definitely a concern. Now, of course, in the Darren Elkins fight, he started to slow down as the fight went a little bit too. And Elkins just, you know, was able to finish that thing, I mean, perfectly. It couldn't work out any better for Elkins, obviously. But there is some question marks around Bektik, and I'm just trying to, I guess, make a case for a possible upset here, or I don't think it's going to happen. I should make a case for better to just kind of be cautious with Bektik until we see him, I guess, in a few more fights up against solid, solid competition. Now, Pepe might not be considered that, but he's okay. And I think he presents some problems with Pepe's aggression. I mean, Pepe is a wild man on the feet. He's getting better. He's improving his stand-up game for sure. But, I mean, he'll throw a haymaker at you, try to knock you out. Bektik has to be careful. So his chin is going to be tested here, even though Bektik should roll in this fight. And he's by far, again, the better mixed martial artist here. I think he's better, the better striker here, obviously. He could do more damage. He could get Pepe out on the feet. I think he's obviously the better grinder, the better wrestler. He's just a better athlete, and he's a better mixed martial artist as a whole. Now, Pepe, of course, he excels more than anything else on the ground. His jiu-jitsu is legit. And Bektik has to be cautious, even if he's on top of Pepe on the ground. I mean, you have to be able to weather that storm and just be smart and, you know, pick your spots and do some damage. And I think Bektik can. In fact, Bektik's the type of guy on the floor that his ground and pound could probably finish Pepe. I mean, Pepe's been a little bit chinny, as we all know as well. So, it's one of those fights. I mean, there's no question. Again, Bektik should win this fight. Would you lay 6-1? Absolutely not. You stay away from it. There's no value left at 6-1 at all. There's nothing. I mean, even at my opener, obviously, I wouldn't touch that as well. So there's no reason to bet this fight. Stay away. Watch it. You probably get an exciting finish, and it's probably Bektik doing so. But like I said, just we need to see, I think, Bektik continue to get tested against dangerous opponents and earn that trust back a little bit, because to me, I have my doubts about him a little bit. But from what you see offensively from Bektik, man, it's a thing of beauty. It's fun to watch this guy fight. So, I mean, he definitely has that kind of potential that he could wear that strap one day if he does address maybe a little bit of cardio issues and, again, that chin. And maybe it's a little unfair for me to say that, but so far, you know, we've seen some flaws in his game. So outside of that, though, he's been far more impressive, and I think he continues his run here. So the pick is Bektik to probably finish Pepe along the way.
I completely agree. I mean, this definitely feels like a bounce back fight opportunity for Bektik. I mean, Bektik is a guy with all the talent in the world. I mean, he's a strong striker. He has excellent grappling, excellent wrestling, heavy ground and pound. I mean, he's the complete package, but he does have the fatal flaw of not having a very good chin. So he's going to have to be very protective of that. I mean, there are plenty of fighters that don't have good chins that have had success in the UFC. I mean, look, Michael Bisping was able to rise up and become a champion by just having a good pace and having a good recovery and making the best of things. So, I mean, there's plenty of fighters that have had success, and Bektik has the tools to be able to overcome that. But it is scary because, I mean, you go back and watch that Elkins fight. I mean, Bektik was absolutely destroying Darren Elkins in the first two rounds. And then he slowed down a little bit, ate one shot that didn't even look like it was that hard in the third round, and he was just over. So that's always going to be a concern, especially if he doesn't put away opponents. Maybe he slows down and eats a shot and loses. Pepe is the type of guy that is long and dangerous with some jumping knee attacks that he has finished fights with. So Bektik is going to have to be careful. I mean, Pepe can explode for a wild, crazy strike at any moment. And if that connects, Bektik could lose. But that being said, as long as he fights smart and avoids situations where Pepe is able to land something crazy, then I think Bektik should not just win, but steamroll Pepe in this fight. If Bektik gets top position, even though Pepe has a good guard, I expect Bektik to just slice through that guard like butter and then just pound on Pepe until he finishes him with ground and pound. Pepe does not have a very good chin either. I mean, Shane Burgos dropped him about three or four times when they last fought. So I don't expect Pepe to be able to withstand Bektik's power if he starts eating shots. And I think this is definitely Bektik's fight to lose. It's just all about protecting that chin and not getting dragged into a long, drawn-out fight. So my pick is Mirsad Bektik. Now moving on to the preliminary card headliner, we have a lightweight contest between Eric Koch, who is 15-5, and Bobby Green, who is 23-8-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Green, minus 160 to come back on Koch, plus 120. Right now, over five dimes, it's minus 165. Green, Koch, plus 145. So line margins have tightened up. Two-way action coming into this fight. Nothing crazy going on so far. Talk about chinny and talk about disappointment in a way. I mean, Koch, another one of these guys that has all the talent in the world. I mean, offensively, he's fun to watch. He's capable of finishing fights. His stand-up game is more than legit offensively. I mean, the guy could end fights with kicks. Obviously, he can end them with his hands as well. He has a great ground game. He has decent wrestling to go along with it. I mean, he is a finisher. He's an exciting fighter to watch. Again, offensively more so than anything. But the problem with Koch has been that chin. I mean, since Lamas was able to get rid of him, you know, in that fight a few years back, Koch's chin has not been the same. I mean, he's been injury prone. We all know that as well. Too many question marks around Koch. So it's a shame because, again, the guy had so much potential. I mean, let's not forget, he was in line for a title shot against Jose Aldo back then. I mean, that's the rise of Koch. That's how good he was. I mean, he made it to that spot, but he just hasn't been the same fighter these last couple of years. And I know that, you know, a lot of expectations are back on him. A lot of people are hoping that, you know, he gets back on track. But again, he suffered a loss to Guida in his last fight, derailed him a little bit after he had a pretty impressive win over what I think is a very dangerous opponent in Campbell. And so Koch looked good in the Campbell fight, didn't look so good against Guida in his last fight as well. So, I mean, obviously we all know that Koch has been put on his back before. That has always been a type of kryptonite, you know, in his arsenal as well. That good grinders, good wrestlers can get him down. And if they can avoid the sub, then they can grind him out a little bit as well. So I don't think that's Green's game plan here. Obviously he don't have to worry about that too much, even though Green has a wrestling background. Green's going to want to keep this fight upright, and he's going to try to knock Koch out. I mean, obviously, Green knows that Koch has a suspect chin as well. He's going to be prepared to stand and bang with him. He's got to be careful in his own right, though, because, again, offensively, there's no issues with Koch's game that way. I mean, if he's able to keep the fight upright and bang with somebody, he's going to have some success as well. And Green, he's been knocked out a couple times in his career, so, and he's not getting any younger. I mean, he's 31 years old. Not that it's old, but in fight years, he's a little bit beyond that. Now, Green's had a couple, I think, overachieving performances in a lot of people's minds. I don't think a lot of people are expecting him to do as well as he did in his last fight against Vanetta, but he deserved to, you know, have a close competitive fight. And Vanetta is obviously a very good, talk about a finishing potential, you know, very dangerous opponent for Green. So Green bounced back, had a very competitive fight before that against Magomedov as well. So Green has faced decent competition. And he's made the fights close. I mean, to the point where they're coin flip type of decisions. So Koch has his hands full here against Green. I mean, I think Green is back in his groove. He's fighting relatively well at this point. And I think he's a little bit more trustworthy, in this matchup than Koch is. So I think what we could see here is a back and forth battle. I think we're going to see both these guys kind of stifle each other out a little bit as far as takedown game goes and neutralize the ground game. I think it's going to stay upright. And if that's the case, then I see Green kind of outpointing Koch to the point where he probably possibly ends up even catching that chin and puts him out. So I have a little bit more confidence in Green. I think he should be the rightful favorite at this point. So I'm going to pick him to win here. And again, it's just a little bit more trust at this stage of his career than I do against Koch. So hopefully I'm wrong. I'd love to see Koch get back on track and just put a string of fights together where his chin holds up and he looks great again. And just, you know, he's back to what we once thought he was, but I don't know. I just don't have that confidence level in him right now. So the pick is Green. I hope he does get a solid win as well for his own sake. I mean, this is, I like both these guys, honestly. I mean, I think both these guys are capable of doing some good things. So, I mean, they both deserve a quality win. And this is exactly that if whoever wins this fight gets that type of win. So I'll pick Green though. Again, I just trust him a little bit more. What should be a fairly competitive fight, but I think Green will get the scorecards if it goes there. If there's going to be a finish, I think it's probably Green stopping Koch as well. So that's why I'm picking him to win.
And I'm siding with Green as well. I know that he hasn't won any of his last four fights, so that is something to be concerned about, but you got to look who he fought, too. I mean, Edson Barboza, Dustin Poirier, Rashid Magomedov, and Lando Vannetta. The Magomedov fight was close. The Vannetta fight ended up being a draw. So, I mean, Green is right there. I mean, he's not an elite lightweight. He's not going to be a guy that is going to get wins over top 10 fighters in the lightweight division anymore. But I mean, he can clearly be competitive against guys that are on the fringe of the top 15. You got to remember, I mean, at one point Green was in the mix for contenders. I mean, he went on a very nice winning streak between Strikeforce and the UFC, beginning his UFC career with a 4 straight wins, including a win over Josh Thompson that really put him in the top 10 at one point. Now, he's clearly hasn't won a fight since then, but I do think that Eric Koch is a beatable opponent. I mean, Koch is a guy that is powerful and is a decent striker, but he's fatally flawed. I mean, he doesn't have a good chin, and Koch, you know, while he has a good guard, he also does not have very good wrestling, and he does get put on his back. So I think Bobby Green can knock Koch out on the feet. And I think he can also, if he wants to, get some takedowns and get top position. And Koch will get stuck on his back. I mean, we've seen Koch eat some huge shots from guys like Ricardo Lamas when he lost TKO in the featherweight division. And then we've seen Koch move up to the lightweight division and get blasted by guys like Darren Cruikshank. So I think while Koch can get wins over guys that are, you know, not as athletic and not as dangerous like Rafael Oliveira or, you know, Shane Campbell, when he does step in there against guys that are more dangerous, like a Dustin Poirier, like a Ricardo Lamas, like a Clay Guida with his wrestling, you know, Koch just gets overwhelmed. And I think Bobby Green is well-rounded enough to push Koch in all facets of this fight. And unless Koch lands a really big shot on the feet and stuns Green, which is possible because Vannetta hurt Green, Poirier knocked Green out, so it's possible. But unless that happens, I think this is Bobby Green's fight to lose. So I think Green at least wins a decision and maybe puts Koch away. Now, kicking off the Fox main card is another lightweight contest between Drew Dober, who is 18-8 and won no contest, against Frank Camacho, who is 21-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Dober -190 to come back at Camacho at +150. Right now, looking for five dimes, -165 for Dober, +145 for Camacho. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. And again, another spot where there is two-way action coming in this fight. Tough. I mean, I know that, again, Dober dropped from 190 to 160, but if you look at it, it's now a 30-cent line. Well, actually, it's a 20-cent line, excuse me, at -165, +145. So that's what I mean by line margins have tightened up a little bit here. And it should. I mean, I think that this is a competitive fight. I do expect Dober. I mean, he is, I think, the more complete mixed martial artist. And I think that he's capable of winning this fight, making it look easy at times as well. So, but the problem is I'm not overly confident in this spot. And it's any fight to me is very competitive if it's under 2-1. And this is obviously fits that category as well. And I'm saying it's competitive and it's a little bit dangerous because Camacho, you have to respect his game, especially on a feet. I mean, he has some knockout power and Dober at times. That's what bothers me with him. He eats too many punches as well. Defensively, he needs to get better a little bit. And this is up at welterweight. So both these guys have fought at welterweight before, of course. So they're not going to be out of their realm, but, I think it's going to be, they're going to be happier, definitely not having to, you know, obviously drop that extra weight. So there's going to be more knockout potential possibly at 170 pounds for each, both of these guys as well. So. Dober, I do trust a little bit more. I think he has a better chin. It's just the problem is, again, he does get marked up. He does get touched up. And Camacho, with that power that he has, he could do some damage here. If the fight goes to the ground, obviously, I think that Camacho's wrestling is not bad. It's a bit underrated at times. His takedown defense is solid as well. But Dober is going to have the advantage on the ground. Now, he has better jiu-jitsu. He's going to be on the attack a little bit more, looking for subs, looking for transitions, and trying to take advantage of the ground game if it does get to that spot as well. But even on the feet, I think Dober could do a little bit more damage. I think Dober's going to be pushing a little bit of a higher pace at times. He's going to be the one kind of being more aggressive. And especially as the fight progresses, I think Camacho's problem a lot of times is if it gets in round two, round three, even though he's a warrior and he has no quit in him, he does start to slow down a little bit, where Dober's conditioning is a little bit better. Of course, most fighters slow down, but I'm saying Dober will be pushing a higher pace in round two, round three. And I think he if he goes to the scorecards, he's able to steal the decision. So I think Dober is more dangerous here. I trust his chin a little bit more. So I think he's the more capable finisher. And I think he is probably the more capable guy at getting the decision here as well. Even though you got to respect Camacho's power and his ability. And this is stylistically, it's an interesting fight for sure. I think it's a winnable fight for both guys, but you do have to favor, I think, Dober in this spot. So that's the way I'm going to go. Dober probably gets the W here. And I wouldn't be surprised if it is by finish.
Yeah, Dober was asked to move up to welterweight after he came in at 183 pounds on fight day for his fight against Josh Berkman in his last bout, which is actually 28 pounds more than what he weighed in at, which is just nuts that somebody could add that much weight in a little over 24 hours. So I understand why they asked him to move up. That's some of the new guidelines with California. And Frank Camacho is the right type of opponent for Dober to be stepping in there against in a move up. I mean, Camacho is only 1 inch taller, only has a couple inches in reach on him. Dober wasn't the biggest guy at lightweight, but he is stocky and compact. And, I think that with the way Camacho fights, the way that he puts himself in situations where he has just violent, exciting scraps, then I think that Dober has a very good opportunity here to really put on a show. I mean, Camacho was in fight of the night in both of his UFC fights so far. So I'm expecting this to be a very entertaining scrap, but it should be one that Dober should win. I mean, Camacho basically got outworked by Li Jinglong, who is just a lot bigger and stronger than him. But against Damian Brown, I mean, that's a fight that Camacho should have been able to finish. I mean, Damian Brown isn't that much of a striker. And I mean, you got to remember when Brown fought Vince Pichel, I mean, he got knocked out in the first round. But against Camacho, they ended up just completely throwing down. And I think over 250 strikes were landed between the two of them in a just an absolute back and forth brawl that was a split decision victory. So against Dober, I think Dober is more technical. I think he'll be quicker, more explosive. He has good power and he can mix it up and get takedowns. That's been a big part of his game that he's really been working on. So while Camacho is exciting and has been in some barn burners, I don't think that he'll be that competitive in this fight. I mean, unless he really lands something significant and, you know, makes Dober change his game plan completely, then I just think that Dober should be able to win this fight however he wants. I mean, Dober should get the better of Camacho on the feet. Dober should land the heavier, stronger shots, and Dober should have the better wrestling game if he has to fall back on that. So I don't really see a lot of paths to victory for Camacho. I expect that he'll be tough and gritty because that's just what he is. And he's been in some, really exciting fights, but this is definitely Drew Dober's fight to lose, even though he is moving up to the welterweight division. So Drew Dober is my pick. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Jordan Rinaldi, who is 13-5, taking on Gregor Gillespie, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Gillespie, minus 405, the comeback on Rinaldi, plus 285. And right now, looking over five dimes, it is currently Gillespie minus 600, the comeback on Rinaldi, at plus 450. Tough spot because, you know, setting a line like this when you have an up-and-coming super prospect, I want to say, and a guy like Gillespie with his wrestling background and all the hype he's got and so far how impressive he's been in the UFC against a savvy veteran like Rinaldi that has a well-rounded game, has some wrestling in his own right. I mean, you can't compare him to Gillespie, of course. But still, I mean, Rinaldi has capabilities. He's got a lot more experience. He's a tough out for a lot of fighters, and he can obviously – he's proven, you know, thus far that he can win fights even on this level in the UFC. So another test for Gillespie, but it's another test he should pass. And I do agree with the early action coming in, even at 4-1. It's a high number, so I wouldn't necessarily go crazy at that. But, again, where it's at right now, I'm not really that surprised. And I think Gillespie should be a pretty solid favorite because I think he really has an advantage almost in all areas in this spot. Pure jiu-jitsu-wise, I think maybe, you know, you could obviously give the edge to Rinaldi, especially, you know, with his experience on the ground overall and, you know, the submission realm. But Gillespie, man, he's obviously – like a sponge when it comes to grappling. So his jiu-jitsu doesn't look bad at all. So I don't expect Rinaldi to actually catch Gillespie on the ground. And I think Gillespie will get top position, obviously. On the feet, I think Gillespie is the quicker and the more explosive fighter. And I think he could do more damage as well. So this stylistically is just a nightmare matchup for Rinaldi, but he does have that kind of veteran type of experience that, you know, he's been in there with all sorts of different, you know, types of fighters and he's experienced power. He's experienced wrestling, everything. So he's not going to be overwhelmed in any aspect of this fight, but Gillespie is going to put the pace on him and he's going to definitely put him in some uncomfortable spots. And I think, I don't want to say dominate, but he probably will be very, very clear in if this fight does hit the scorecards. I don't think there's going to be too many question marks. I don't think it's going to be a 29-28 type of decision win. I think it's going to be a 30-27 type of decision win for Gillespie, or we could see Gillespie actually finish Rinaldi. I mean, his chin has been suspect at times. He's only had one official knockout loss in his pro career. But that being said, he's again another one of these fighters that has been rocked in the past. And, you know, he could definitely take that kind of damage and possibly get finished against a guy like Gillespie here in this spot. So I think that it's Gillespie's fight to win or lose. There's not much really more to say about this. I mean, he's a huge favorite for a reason. And I think he continues his rise in the lightweight division here. So another impressive win for Gillespie's on deck here. So the pick is Gillespie. And probably by decision, but one kind of out of stoppage either.
Jordan Rinaldi is fighting in his backyard, but that's about all he has going for him here. I mean, he's a strong grappler, and he's a pretty solid overall fighter, but this is just a nightmare matchup for him. I mean, Gregor Gillespie is one of the best up-and-coming prospects in the UFC lightweight division. He showcased power on the feet, excellent wrestling, very strong top control and good ground and pound. So realistically, the best thing Rinaldi has going for him is his submission game. And I just don't see Gillespie getting tapped out. Gillespie has so much power on the feet that I think that there's a very good chance that he doesn't just beat Rinaldi on the ground. He might knock him out standing. I mean, Gillespie has already picked up a TKO victory with some heavy strikes that he's landed on the feet, and Rinaldi doesn't have a very good chin. So that's something that Gillespie realistically could pull off. I think Gillespie, you know, being a former national champion wrestler, has a strong grappling and ground advantage anyway against Rinaldi, even though Rinaldi does come from a wrestling background. I mean, this is just a very bad stylistic matchup for Rinaldi. I mean, if Rinaldi wants to win, he needs to face guys that, do not have great grappling. And like in his last fight, when he picked up a Von Fluchoke, you're going to pick up Von Fluchokes against guys that don't know what they're doing on the ground. And Gillespie is the complete opposite of that. So this is Gillespie's fight to lose. I've said more than enough about this. I mean, I just think he wins it wherever he wants it, and he should get a finish. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the featherweight division, we have Dennis Bermudez, who is 17-7, taking on Andre Feely, who is 17-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in this, Bermudez minus 190, the comeback on Feely plus 150. Right now over at Five Dimes, it is Bermudez minus 155, the comeback on Feely plus 135. So line margins have tightened up here again, and there is a little bit more action coming in Feely's way. I am a bit surprised. I don't think it's necessarily wrong, though. I think that's probably the way to go here with in this matchup against Bermudez. I was a little bit surprised because a lot of people like to usually take Bermudez lines up and, you know, and go crazy, especially the public bettors, because of Bermudez's style. I mean, obviously he was on that crazy run in the featherweight division where, you know, he rolled off what, 8 or 9 wins in a row there at one point. I mean, he was just, you know, like I said, on his way to a title shot, really. Bermudez was right there, but unfortunately for him, he didn't make it to that point, and he started, you know, having some setbacks. And the problem with Bermudez throughout his career, again, it's not his talent. I mean, the guy is a grinder. The guy has speed on the feet. I mean, he's got some knockout power on the feet as well. Offensively, he's got some slick chokes to go along with it. Now, but he also has some flaws. His submission defense has let him down at times as well. And that chin has definitely been suspect. He's another one of these guys that he's only had a couple of knockout losses in his career, but some of those subs that I was talking about have actually come from him getting rocked and then submitted as well. So his chin is definitely a problem in most cases. Now, if he doesn't get knocked out, if he doesn't get rocked, obviously, he's usually able to get the fight to the ground and grind his opponents out and just control them with that pressure and that pace that he puts on his opponents. A lot of people can't take it. They can't get him off, you know, once he's on the ground as well. I mean, he's just that type of grinder, that type of wrestler, and that type of, you know, fighter, that he's just a very tough out. So that's why I'm surprised, again, the betting public didn't come in yet on Bermudez, but I think we will start seeing more action come in his way as well. I mean, Feely at times doesn't get the respect he deserves. I'm glad that, you know, people are giving him some love here as well, because he's actually looked pretty good. Unfortunately for him, a couple fights back, he ran into Kadar, which he had that setback, but then he bounced back, of course, against Lobov and got a win that I thought he should have got. I mean, Feely should beat a guy like Lobov as well. I mean, so Feely's one of these guys that's been, I think, improving fight by fight as well, but has had, you know, some setbacks along the way, and his chin is a little bit suspect. His sub defense is a little bit suspect as well. I don't think it's as bad as Bermudez, though, in this regard. And I think he is going to be the more dangerous and more capable finisher here in this spot. If his takedown D holds up here against Bermudez, he's going to be landing those knees in a clinch. He's going to be landing the strikes on the feet. He's going to be testing that chin of Bermudez for sure. So I think Feely is a very dangerous opponent for Bermudez in this fight. And I think it is a dog or pass situation. Even still at the plus 135, I would not lay the juice. I would not lay the chalk on Bermudez. Especially at this point of his career, he's not getting any younger. And again, in fight years, he's beyond 31 years old. So I think we can, I mean, maybe it's a little bit unfair to say Bermudez is kind of on the decline here because of what he's proven as of late, and especially even against Elkins. I mean, it was a close, you know, decision loss that he had last time out, but I still think that Bermudez is at that stage where you got to be careful with him. I mean, in a fighter against a guy like Feely is a dangerous opponent, and you cannot trust that chin, and you cannot trust, you know, his stability here at all. So I'm going to pick Feely. I think he probably gets a job done here. I think he probably knocks Bermudez out. So I'm going to go with the underdog. I think the early action that did come in that way is probably correct. So that's my pick.
I'm going to start this breakdown with a disclaimer. I am terrible at picking Andre Feely fights. When I pick him to win, he loses. When I pick him to lose, he wins. So just take that with a grain of salt. So that being said, I'm picking him to lose this time around. Dennis Bermudez has not been that impressive lately with the two straight losses, including the knockout loss to the Korean Zombie and the decision loss to Elkins. But granted, those were top 10 opponents. When Bermudez doesn't fight top 10 opponents, he usually looks great. He goes out there and he gets his wrestling going. He gets that aggression on the feet going. And clearly he's a flawed fighter because he gets himself into, you know, exciting stand-up fights, and he's not that good of a stand-up fighter. He doesn't have that much power, and he gets hit and doesn't have that good of a chin. His recovery's pretty good, but you gotta be very nervous every time you see Bermudez willing to throw down on the feet. Now, Andre Feely is a pretty solid overall striker and clearly is the better striker than Bermudez. So if this fight has extended stand-up exchanges, Feely has a very good chance of winning. If Bermudez is able to get this fight to the floor, however, then I think Bermudez is going to have a very one-sided victory. Feely does not have that good a takedown defense. That's something you have to remember. I mean, he's only at 60% takedown defense, while Bermudez is a very aggressive and powerful and explosive wrestler. I mean, he's a guy that can just shoot in a power double. He's not the technical type of guy that's just going to grab a single leg and try to finesse his way to get you to the floor. I mean, Bermudez tries to throw people around. So I think as long as Bermudez sticks to what got him here, which has been the wrestling, that's always been what helped him become a top 15 UFC featherweight, then I still think that he can pull this fight off. But if he gets suckered into a brawl, Feely has a very good chance of winning. So this one could go either way, but I definitely am siding with Bermudez because I do like and favor his wrestling. Now this brings us to the main event of the evening. In the middleweight division, we have Ronaldo Jacare Souza, who is 24-5 with one no contest, taking on Derek Brunson, who is 18-5, and this is a rematch. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Jacare Souza minus 155 to come back on Brunson at plus 115. Right now over five dimes is Jacare Souza minus 140 to come back on Brunson plus 120. So line margins have tightened up, basically staying where I opened it. There is two action coming into this fight as well. And it's a tough one, man. If you look back at their 2012 fight, obviously this is a rematch of the fight that took place back in Strikeforce, and Jacare was able to knock Brunson out, and he knocked him out quick in that fight as well. So he was around, I believe, minus 445 favorite. Jacare was a big, so basically a 4-1 favorite over Brunson at that time, but a lot has changed since that time. So I think that, you know, obviously what we're looking at now, with these two guys is a whole different situation, because you have Brunson that is more than what he was back then. I mean, back in 2012, Brunson was more well known for his wrestling. Let's face it. So a lot of people thought maybe he could, you know, get some takedowns, avoid, the submissions, you know, from Jacare off his back. A lot of people weren't giving Brunson much of a chance as a striker in that spot back then, or not at least what he is now. But since that time, obviously Brunson has proven and he's gotten better. I mean, training with, you know, the crew over at Greg Jackson's, he's been putting the work in and he's become more than just a wrestler. He's become a very dangerous opponent, even on the feet, to strike with. So he has that kind of wrestler's knockout power. He's not afraid to use it now. He gets a little bit more aggressive with it. At times that can be bad for him, of course, because his defense, I mean, if you just look back at that craziness that happened in the Whitaker fight, that was insane. So he doesn't want to show up and just go nuts like that, obviously, because it doesn't matter who you're fighting against. If you're that sloppy and aggressive, you're going to get hurt and do some damage. And of course, Jacare does have some underrated striking in his own right. So Brunson has to be a little bit more disciplined, and he's shown some discipline, obviously, since that Whitaker fight. I mean, he should have, honestly, should have beat Anderson Silva. We all know that. And then, of course, he's had a couple knockouts after that to the likes of Machida and Dan Kelly. So I think Brunson has been a little bit more disciplined. He understands what he has to do here. He understands that Jacare's chin is definitely suspect, and this is a great time to pick off a great opponent, because Jacare is, in my opinion, probably the most complete middleweight on the planet, because he's known for his grappling style. Nobody's going to out-grapple Jacare on the ground as far as jiu-jitsu skill. There's no way. I mean, especially in the middleweight division, he's one of the best grapplers all time in MMA. I mean, that's how highly this guy ranks on the ground. So you're not going to out-grapple him. You're not going to want to play the ground game with him, even if you're a wrestler. So you don't want to do that. But Jacare has made himself even better by developing his striking game to the point where he's effective with it. I mean, if you watch him strike on the feet offensively, the guy is good. He has some power. His technique is clean. He can be very effective. But the problem again with him is he's 38 years old. He's aging. His chin has always been a little bit suspect, and it's not getting any better. And of course, if you're looking back at that last fight that he had with Whitaker as well, Whitaker was able to get rid of him in the second round, and that was not a good look for Jacare. He took some damage in that fight big time. So now he's coming off of a knockout loss like that at age 38. going up against another wrestler that can actually keep the fight upright, because Brunson has tremendous takedown defense. So Jacare is probably not going to get this fight to the ground. And Brunson on the feet is dangerous. So this is a battle of the chins, really. Whose chin's going to hold up? Because both these guys are more than capable of knocking each other out. So I trust Brunson a little bit more at this point. I just think, you know, he is going to have a little bit of reach over Jacare on the feet. I can't believe I'm saying that because I don't trust his chin all that much, but I do trust Brunson's chin a little bit more in this spot. And I think, again, his confidence level, and he's going to have that kind of chip on his shoulder in this spot as well to prove to everybody that, hey, I'm better than Jacare. I'm going to get that win back, that I suffered, you know, that defeat a few years back or whatnot. He has more incentive here, at least, to prove a point and to possibly turn this into, with a win, a potential title matchup, again, a rematch possibly with either Whitaker or Rockhold or Romero, of course. So, this is a lot at stake here for both guys, but I do feel like Brunson is the more capable fighter at this point and probably does get the finish over Jacare. So my pick is Brunson by finish over Jacare Souza.
And I can completely understand picking Brunson. Granted, you know, Souza did destroy him the first time they faced each other, but that was over 5 years ago now. So Jacare Souza was never a young middleweight. I mean, he got into MMA a little late in his career, and he's 38 years old now. So that is definitely something you have to take into consideration with this fight. And but Brunson's 34. I mean, he doesn't look it, but he's, you know, getting up there in years a little bit as well in the middleweight division. But that being said, Souza is the more well-rounded and technical fighter of the two. He still is an elite athlete. He has heavy hands. He has an incredible ground game if he can get top position on the floor against Brunson, who is a strong wrestler. So, I mean, I still have to favor Souza, but Brunson is more dangerous now. I mean, since that loss to Souza, I mean, Brunson just went on a tear in the UFC. I mean, he turned things around. And, I mean, he was just destroying people. He had those impressive victories over guys like Brian Houston and Chris Lieben, and almost beat Yoel Romero. You got to remember, I mean, he was up two rounds on Romero and then got knocked out in the third round. But then, you know, he picked up quality wins over guys like Lorenz Larkin, Sam Alvey, Uriah Hall. So, and then most recently, he bounced back a little bit after his little two-loss streak, which really should have been a one-loss streak, as he should have got the win against Anderson Silva, in my opinion. The one loss to Robert Whittaker because he was just too wild and aggressive. But since then, you know, quality wins over a guy like Lyoto Machida in his last fight. So, you know, Brunson is a guy with a ton of power, a very, you know, athletic ability, and excellent wrestling. So if Brunson can focus on that, then there's a decent chance that he can still beat Jacare. I mean, he just has to protect his chin. And his chin really hasn't been as much of an issue as Jacare's has been lately. You know, Jacare got rocked against Romero. He got TKO'd against Whitaker. And, you know, that's something that you definitely have to be concerned about a little bit. So while I do think that Jacare still has the potential to win this fight, I'm very concerned about what happens if he eats a big head kick or a big looping strike from Brunson, especially if Brunson stays composed. I mean, Brunson fought a completely different style of fight when he took on Anderson Silva. He wasn't nearly as aggressive because he knew that his opponent was a spectacular striker and could counter him if he was just swinging wildly. So if Brunson stays a little bit more composed, instead of just charging in recklessly, then I think that there's a decent chance that he can pull this off. But that being said, Jacare Souza, I just think that overall he's still the better fighter, and he does have good power in his hands. And if he can step in and crack Brunson, then there's a good chance that he should win. He is the more technical striker of the two, in my opinion, and while Brunson does have the reach advantage, I think Souza still has that explosiveness to step in and land that kill shot like he did 5 years ago. So my pick is going to be Souza, but if this fight gets dragged out and Souza starts to slow down, then Brunson can definitely win it. So this could be a fight that you pay attention to in the live betting scenarios. Although granted, conditioning has really never been either of these guys' strong suits. But my pick is going to be Jacare. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 27. Now, our premium bets will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.